Always love chatting with Audrey Anderson. She joins us in studio here today from the great folks at Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, how are you doing here today?
I'm doing great. How are you? I'm glad you're feeling better.
Yeah, thank you. Happy New Year to you. We chatted on New Year's Eve. You're always so great to join us, even on the holidays. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for always asking.
Yeah, so really quickly for, you know, we've chatted a few times. We got a little bit longer today. I just want to remind people, what exactly do you guys do at Anderson Attorneys and Advisors? What sorts of folks do you represent?
So we represent adults and juveniles charged with crimes, criminal offenses, and we also represent parents or guardians or other adults that are being investigated by DCFS, the Department of Children and Family Services, for alleged abuse of children or neglect of children.
Right. And someone off the bat might say, oh my gosh, you're but no, everyone deserves a defense, needs a lawyer to navigate worlds, and these are difficult things to navigate and important things to navigate, right?
That's very true, and you're right. People ask me all the time how we're able to do that. But, you know, it's sometimes good people that just make a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get charged with offense. And so that's our job, to help them navigate through that and have them get the best outcome that they possibly can.
And the best outcome for the child, right? Because I think a lot of people on the outside looking in say, you know, oh, this should happen. X, Y, and Z should happen. Well, is that really what will be best for the child to grow up and have a healthy and stable life? Sometimes it's a situation that's a little different, and it requires people like you to help out and make sure that we get to that end.
That's very true. And it's so hard because it involves children, and there's nothing more than a parent loves than their child. And so it's so hard to understand the hoops that parents have to jump through, or guardians or other adults that are in care for children, when something like that arises against them.
For sure. It's a very serious topic. I want to, and you guys came up with a fun idea, just to lighten it up a little bit. Haley, why don't you go and play some music? I know some people are on the holidays as we listen to some music that you might have heard in Home Alone. I don't hear that right now, Haley. I've got you. There we go. All right, a little Home Alone music playing here. The McAllisters, they go to France. We all know the story. This is no spoiler alert if you haven't seen Home Alone. They leave Kevin behind, and he, of course, has to deal with the burglars. That would not be a good thing for the McAllisters in Illinois, would it, Audrey?
No, not nowadays. Back in the 80s when this happened, that was probably not as tough and stringent back then. But nowadays, that would be a serious problem for parents.
And Illinois specifically, right?
Right. Illinois has one of the harshest laws, and investigations by the Department of Children and Family Services, also known as DCFS, for parents that leave a child unattended or alone at home or in a vehicle.
I don't know how old Kevin is. I think 10. Let's say 10, okay? I know. How long could you leave Kevin behind before you're in trouble? Probably only a minute or two, right?
Right. And so that's the problem, because you may have a mature 10-year-old, or you think is a mature and gifted 10-year-old, as opposed to a 10-year-old with special needs. And there really is no guideline for parents about what is a significant time, or too long or too short, to leave a child home alone, or what's the appropriate age.
Yeah. Do they have a fine line where, okay, once they're 15, you can leave them for 30 minutes, or is it more nebulous than that?
Right, but DCFS is really more nebulous, and that's the problem, because each child, each person is different. So you know your child more than other people do, but it's a one-size-fits-all when it comes to DCFS.
So what is the size that fits all for DCFS?
Right, there isn't any, unfortunately.
Okay. So there's no set standard. It's more of a judgment call.
Correct. It really is a more subjective judgment call for your DCFS caseworker.
You know, so that's interesting, because I know a lot of people say, well, of course you should never leave a kid behind. Of course you don't want to leave a kid behind when you go to France for a week and a half. But there are parents out there that know their kids, and boy, I'm trying to think, when we were kids, things are way different, right? Because I think my parents are listening, so I shouldn't say anything too much, but I had an older brother. I'm sure they left us with us when they went to the store, and he was 13 maybe, and I was 11. Right?
Right, definitely. You go to the store, or a mom dropping off her husband, your dad, at the train station or the bus stop. That happened all the time back when we were kids in the 80s, not to date us, but that happened all the time. It's completely different now.
So who is the adjudicator? Who makes the decisions on what is okay or not? Is it DCFS? Is it a judge after DCFS takes the case? Walk us through how that might play out. If someone was like, maybe a nosy neighbor was like, you left your kid for too long, how does that actually play itself out through a court system?
Right. There are nosy neighbors or jealous exes that could be the problem that calls in DCFS. So you have two things going on. You have a criminal investigation if someone calls 911 to report you to law enforcement to investigate, as well as call the DCFS hotline for a child abuse and neglect investigation. So two separate things that can be occurring. So DCFS will come to your home within 24 hours to investigate. and whether or not it was an inappropriate amount of time that you could have put your child at serious risk of harm, imminent serious harm, by being left alone in a car or at home or a residence.
Mm-hmm. But even that's nebulous, too. It's, I mean, one could make the argument, well, there's dangerous things at the home. There's ovens, there's stovetops, there's tools in the basement, right? What does it mean if, you know, what could be a dangerous situation to leave a kid in? That's nebulous, too.
That's absolutely correct. And it's so case by case. And it just depends on your child and what they have access to or how prepared a child is for circumstances if something happens or how old the child is. So if they're under six, the criminal statutes say that the court can infer that if a child is left alone for 10 minutes.
Under the age of six.
Correct. Under the age of six and under.
Six and under, okay.
Then that was child endangerment. It's different for DCFS. There's really no specific time limit or age, but obviously they do take age and the abilities of a child into account. So if your child has special needs, then obviously, even if they're older, they should not be left alone, as opposed to a child that same age that doesn't have special needs.
Now, does DCFS make this determination? They analyze the case. A lot of great workers that are trying their best to try and figure. I mean, they're historically understaffed and a lot of pressure on a lot of these folks to do a lot of work. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt. They're well-meaning. They're trying to do the best they can. When they make their recommendation, is that final? Is that what happened? Is that, are they a law enforcement body, or does it then get transferred to a judge who then you could argue in front of the judge? How does that work?
Right. So DCFS is not law enforcement. They're a separate branch, separate entirely. But you're right. The DCFS caseworker, a child welfare specialist, reviews everything, reviews it with their supervisor. And it is kind of subjective based on each caseworker. There are guidelines for them, but they use their experience. And then they can indicate or unfound. If it's indicated, the parent or guardian gets a notice. And then you could file an appeal and have a hearing in front of an administrative law judge, which is then argued not by a prosecutor, but by a DCFS department attorney. And then hopefully the parent is smart enough to hire an attorney like myself to represent them and make arguments at this hearing, which is sort of like a trial mm-hmm. in front of a judge.
Okay. Those got to be emotional hearings.
It very much is. And that's why I always recommend for parents or any person to make sure that they hire an attorney, because it's so personal. They're attacking you and your decisions and your family. So it's really important to have an attorney who not only understands the system and the law behind it, but also to kind of remove that emotional aspect from it. Mm-hmm. So you really shouldn't represent yourself.
What happens if they rule against you? I mean, what happens to children that are separated from their parents? I'm so naive on this subject. Is it they get sent into the foster system and parents pick them up? Or are there a certain number of things that can happen? Or is it like a probationary time where a child could be maybe sent away for a little bit, but the parent can then prove themselves to be able to take care of the child again? What happens?
It's all of that. So if it's something that DCFS, the caseworker, the initial caseworker, finds that it's serious, what they could do is put you in a program called Intact Family Services. It's voluntary, or a safety plan where the child is either with you or they're with a relative or a foster family. So you can't have unsupervised contact, but you're still not involved in the court system. If it's severe enough, the caseworker could remove the child from your home, place them with a family or friend, and then bring you into court where a judge gets involved, the state attorney's office gets involved. And you have to complete all these goals that they set for you before the child can be returned to you. And unfortunately, that could take years sometimes.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here. We'll have more with Audrey Anderson, Anderson Attorney at Advisors, AndersonAA.com, right?
Right.
Best place for people to go. More after this on Let's Get Legal. Audrey Anderson here. And Audrey, we've had you on to talk about big criminal defense cases. But you work obviously with a lot of juveniles, as we talked about. Why is that one of your passions? I'm curious. Trying to peel back the layers here of Audrey.
Well, it's just so interesting. Juveniles, they have so much going on in their head. And just thinking back when I was a teenager, which was a long time ago, you make mistakes, right?
Right.
And when we were kids, it seemed like you kind of got away with a lot. And so juveniles now, they have so much more pressure. And I just want them to be represented well and get the best outcome for their cases. Because even bringing a pocket knife to school could be something that you can be criminally charged for and expelled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's terrible. They have no bad intentions for that. And I want someone like me who's capable of experience to represent them in the best capable way, because they just made a stupid mistake.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up, because I think we all talk about helicopter parenting being more prominent. Well, maybe it's helicopter laws and regulations, and we are really Again, I think lawmakers often have good intentions. And of course, we've talked about serious situations that happened and that are far too frequent in schools where something really serious happens. But you're right. And when something happens to a juvenile, if they don't have proper defense, and sometimes even if they do, I mean, these are things that could impact them well beyond their time as a juvenile, right?
Right. It affects them. So if they're charged with something minor, it can affect them as an adult, getting into a good college or getting a job or a trade school. It affects them long into adulthood, which impacts the rest of their life. And I think that the laws make sense because of all the crazy things that are happening in schools now. So I think parents and legislatures are reacting to be proactive.
Yeah, they got to do something, right?
Right. And then the kids that really have no bad intents sometimes get caught in the middle.
Yeah, it's just hard. And for everyone that loves to kind of come down on adults or kids that make quick mistakes, I always just caution everyone to take a beat and think about when you were 14 or 15. Maybe you didn't do the exact same thing that a child is accused of. And there's heinous things that juveniles have done, don't get me wrong, that you would never do. But you got to think more not only about what I have done that, but did my background and where I grew up and the parents who raised me put me in a situation that, of course, I wouldn't have done that. But that's not the case for everyone, is it?
No, it's really not. And some kids are just brought up in tough situations. And so they still need someone like me to fight for them.
Yeah.
Because they still need a voice, even though they can't have one by themselves.
Well, and let's be honest, too, that the only thing that if you're going to throw a bunch of juveniles behind bars or put them into something for minor offenses or things that they did wrong, not saying there shouldn't be any punishments, but you're never going to break this cycle then. They have kids. It could be a very similar thing. I mean, we talk about, you know, criminal justice reform. That applies to juveniles, too, about making right decisions, because the ultimate goal is if a 14-year-old does something stupid, that we want them to eventually become a productive part of society and raise a family and have kids if that's what they choose to do, that won't make those similar mistakes, right?
Right, and exactly. And that's one of the good aspects, actually, of juvenile law. And when a juvenile gets charged and brought into court, that the judge has the authority and jurisdiction to order the parents and other family members to comply and do counseling or other things to help a family. So that's beneficial, too, to speak for the kid, to understand why they did what they did, and okay, to help the entire family.
For sure. Let's talk about DCFS again, what we were talking about. Our lead-in was a Home Alone Kevin McAllister situation, but of course, there's serious things happening. We mentioned about who calls DCFS the most, and we talked about nosy neighbors, and we talked about exes as well, right? They often are. And why? What motivates an ex, a jealous ex, to call in? What's in it for them?
I think the problem with jealous exes, they just want revenge. And unfortunately, these poor kids get stuck in the middle. For these investigations, they're talking with complete strangers at home. But a lot of time, these DCFS caseworkers just show up at school. And then the kid gets pulled out of the class, tossed into a conference room to talk to a complete stranger about what's going on at home. And the parents have no idea that their kid is being spoken to by DCFS, some adult that this kid has never met. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really kind of revenge against an ex.
Right. And oftentimes that ex might be doing similar things too, and they're just trying to get ahead or use that piece as a part of leverage. But besides nosy neighbors or jealous exes, there are a lot of people that are required by law to notify DCFS of certain things. And that's an important part of this too.
That's very true. And there are a lot of statutory mandated reporter or those individuals that because of their job, they're required by law to call DCFS if they suspect child abuse or neglect, or else they themselves could be criminally charged. So that includes teachers, so a lot of people at schools, or coaches, and of course, doctors and nurses, they're required to as well.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about DCFS, and again, they are often underpaid, overworked, and stretched to the limit in so many ways. But I do feel one thing that is hard about the whole system, and I guess there's no way around this. It's the same thing with going before one judge or another. Each caseworker is different. And their analysis, really, there's a lot riding on it. And so I'm glad that hopefully people reach out to folks like you in a situation like that, because it shouldn't come down to one person issuing an edict. I know there's other, you know, reviews that happen, because it isn't just what the caseworker says goes. Or is it? Do they have a huge influence on the outcome of a case?
The caseworkers actually, unfortunately, do have a huge influence. They run everything by their supervisor, but it's really their perspective and how they slant or skew the information that they've received. So it could be subjective by the caseworker.
Yeah.
Very true. Their experience, where they're located, which county, which cities that they have to cover, that makes a huge difference, too, of what they've seen in the past.
Yeah. Let's also talk about protecting DCFS workers, because boy, there's been horrible situations. I mean, they are, again, they're knocking on doors, going into situations. They may not be armed with all, well, first of all, armed at all, but armed with the information they need to have about where they're walking into. There have been, unfortunately, really terrible situations involving DCF caseworkers, right?
Right. And I know that people knock DCFS caseworkers, but you're right. They go into these situations, these homes of people that they've never met. They've reached out to maybe that local police department to get police reports on that family, but they really don't know about how volatile that home may be. So recently, a caseworker in Illinois was unfortunately murdered by one of the people at the home visit.
Just doing their job.
Right. And they're just trying to do their job to protect children, which everyone obviously wants to protect children. And she unfortunately lost her life for that.
Oh, and what are lawmakers doing about that? I mean, obviously, they catch the person, it's murder, but there should be other protections for DCF workers, DCFS workers, and I imagine the legislature's trying, correct?
Right, they are trying. So DCFS is trying to get local law enforcement to allow the local law enforcement officers to go with caseworkers to these home visits, because it's not really within the scope of a law enforcement or a police officer's job, but also to increase the penalties. So to protect DCFS caseworkers like you would a paramedic, a firefighter, or a police officer, a teacher. So if they get injured or unfortunately if they're killed, there is more serious consequences criminally for the person that committed that offense.
Right. I ask all this, and I think it's just to put a fine point on it as well. Often you're representing a client who may have been ruled in a negative way by DCFS. This isn't you and your attorneys and your clients against DCFS. Everyone's trying to work towards a solution that works best for the child, right?
That's totally correct. We're trying to help that child have the best outcome and the best future possible. But unfortunately, sometimes the parents' perspective and DCFS caseworkers' perspective is different.
Yeah. Is this a large part of your caseload that you work with? Is parents, unfortunately, that are affected by situations like this?
It definitely is. And I think, unfortunately, because of COVID, it's drastically increased.
Oh, really?
Kids and everyone's being at home more. So there's a lot more tension perhaps in the home, or a lot more people that are at home observing what neighbors do that are reporting it to DCFS. So we have definitely seen an increase in these DCFS investigations than we did probably before, you know, springtime of 2020.
So the nosy neighbor is a little bored, too, and at home and looking out the window.
Right. And it's all these people, all these family members trapped at home 24/7, whereas before kids went off to school, the adults went off to work or, you know, to the gym or whatever else that they did. So there was some separation time.
Right.
But now you have everyone stuck in the home altogether dealing
right.
with it.
And by the way, we should also say, of course, if you see something serious, there's nothing, absolutely report it. We're not trying to say that every nosy neighbor is doing the wrong thing. It's just that they're there. And a lot of times it's good on them to report certain things they see.
Oh, absolutely. And you can report everything and DCFS investigates and they say, oh, you know what? There's nothing wrong.
Right.
You're doing a great job, parent. Keep going on with it. And that gets explained too. But you're right. Like if you see something out and about or you're suspicious because you haven't seen your next door neighbor's child leave.
Right.
You definitely should call.
Right. And I just want to make that point. We're not trying to knock people that are trying to do the right things for kids. I think it's just a hard area, right? We all want our next generation to live great and to live fruitful lives. And we all have different opinions on how maybe that should be done. And we all have to navigate this world together. Audrey, where can people reach you and all the things that you do at Anderson Attorneys and Advisors?
Well, probably through our website is best, which is www.AndersonAA.com. That's probably the best way.
And 630-877-5800 is the number I'm seeing on the website, right?
Correct.
630-877-5800. Audrey, as always, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks again for having us.
Absolutely.